rather than introduce myself, which would be not appropriate, I'd like to invite my colleague and friend and teacher, Michael Maccabee, to give a few words of introduction.
I'm sure that those of us who have been listening here have gotten to know many of Richard's ideas and passions very well. However, I'm happy to describe more about him that you may not know. I mean, he's a clinical psychologist and a leadership consultant. He's worked on many projects in the United States and Europe, starting with me 45 years ago. I was on his PhD committee. Richard has also done a really major consultation to the senior military and civilian leadership of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for 15 years. I'm sorry Myra's not here because she talked about suing the Corps. I would think she and Richard might have something interesting to talk about. He wrote the Corps' learning organization and doctrine, and he taught a leadership course in the districts of the Corps around the U.S. for the leadership of the Corps. He's consulted with public, private, international organizations, the United States, Sweden, Ireland. He worked with me and some associates on a grant I got from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation to study leadership in the best healthcare organizations in the country. His research was the basis of the 2013 book published by Josie Bass, Transforming Healthcare Leadership, A Systems Guide to Improve Quality, Lower Cost, and Improve Population Health. It's authored by me, Cliff and Jane Norman and Richard. He's on the board of the Lincoln Group of DC and co-leads Lincoln Study Group. But he, as we've seen here, Richard is an intellectual entrepreneur. He has really supported what this conference, I think what this conference really has focused on, which is empowering citizens to improve the country in many ways, of understanding the challenges. He's brought us inspiring visionaries to learn from. It's tremendous work. He's done it, he's done this practically single-handedly. And it's only the start of spreading these ideas. Richard.
Thank you, Michael. It's been an honor over these 50 years to work with you and to learn from you and to share so much with you as a friend. And thank you very much, very much. Let me just say that, I'm going to speak to our American home and our independence. We have had presentations from 24 visionary and active citizen presenters over these 5 days. And I want to thank them all for their hard work, their willingness to participate, and their contributions that are stimulating. And I'm sure along with other people, I've learned a great deal. I will try to bring their ideas briefly into my presentation to show the connections and interdependency of all our concerns. I say briefly because time did not allow, at this point, a fuller exploration of their presentations for today. as I heard them for the first time myself over these past 5 days, with the exception of two presentations. And the presentations of Myra Jackson and Gar Alperovitz, who spoke in the past a few hours, unfortunately cannot be so quickly incorporated, and I apologize for that, but they have been extremely moving and creative, and I will work to incorporate them more fully in the period ahead. Especially for them, the fuller examination and inclusion of their work and that of all the other presenters will be part of the book that will come from this conference and the college course we will all work on together. While this conference has not created a complete vision for our country, we did not expect or intend such comprehensiveness. Many challenges we face as a society were not addressed. There is much work to do, more work to do, by many more citizens than the few of us who spoke over these 5 days. We hope to hear from many more citizens in future conferences on these unaddressed challenges, and please feel free to contact us. Part of the challenge that I address today is the media's absorption on the disunity of America, which is an irrefutable reality. In Professor Lessig's conception, this is an addiction purposely created to keep us captive to the media's feeding us this bad brain food. As addicts, we are led to avoid our interdependence as citizens and as members of the human community globally. The ideal future that might begin to address that is to recognize that America is the home of the American people, all of our fellow citizens. We are interdependent for our survival. As citizens, we can begin to realize that ideal future by working in our communities, as Gar and Myra have been emphasizing, in our schools and colleges, in our places of worship, in our families, and in our own hearts and minds. The Declaration of Independence and the Constitution defined the founding purpose and values for our country. However, these national charters contain tragic compromises. White supremacy and the legal system of enslaving millions of African Americans contradicted the vision of freedom and equal rights for everyone. The expropriation of Native Americans' land, the genocidal war on them and their removal to reservations contradicted the declaration to the world that this would be a wholly new kind of society, a democracy of the people, as the Constitution says. Through civil war, constitutional amendments, and mass movements, Americans have been extending the founding vision to more citizens and continually perfecting this vision of a democratic society of freedom and equality. We can, if we choose, to hold this truth to be self-evident, that America is the home of the American people. It's true, America is a land, as we sing, from sea to shining sea, or has been sung by Woody Guthrie, "This land is made for you and me." America is a country, the greatest country in the world, many claim. We need to pay attention to Gar's statistics. Certainly, our country is great, though claiming total greatness requires agreeing on the criteria and the metric, which Gar's statistics from the OECD have shown us. America is a market, the largest economy and market in the world. We can conceive America as a land, a country, or a market. Each concept has its purpose. Words and ideas do matter. Ideas focus thinking, and they channel emotions. A vision is an idea. Visioning is the action necessary to achieve a vision. Abraham Lincoln said, "You cannot escape the responsibility of tomorrow by evading it today." And the best way to predict the future is to create it. Let us think of America as the home of the American people, and recognize that those living in our home are interdependent. Recall that after the 9/11 terrorist attack, we discovered the lack of interdependence of our various departments of government to fulfill the Constitution's requirement to provide for the common defense. We integrated 22 departments and agencies to establish the Department of Homeland Security. Some countries call themselves the fatherland, others the motherland. As non-united colonies, we separated from a father-dominated Britain. Many American colonists before the Revolution called King George III our father. As a revolutionary new kind of society in which citizens were declared equal if they were white, we rejected this parental transference of emotion and allegiance, although some still like to call George Washington the father of our country. We are not a fatherland or a motherland. We are a homeland. America is not only the home of the brave, as we sing. America, as the home of all Americans, refocuses our thinking about our country, refocuses our emotions of devotion and love for our country and each other. And it can help us see our ideal future with new eyes. As Myra was telling us, we often don't understand what we see because we don't have the proper reference. America, as the home of the American people, requires continually building a democratic small d culture of interdependent responsibility for all Americans' well-being. There are forces that emphasize our disunity, but these hide our interdependence. Before the COVID and racial injustice pandemics, we have suffered decades of partisan conflict. Challenges facing our nation are viewed through a partisan and tribal filter. Both parties and most politicians seem to be carriers of this disunity virus infecting our body politic. Citizens need to vision an interdependent ideal future, surviving in our interconnected world of technology, trade, finance, travel, warfare, climate change, and amid pandemics of viruses, profound economic inequality and racial injustice requires recognizing our human and structural interdependencies. More than the consent of the governed that is in our founding documents, the future of our country requires visioning of active citizens to make a better America. The founders wanted their progeny to continually make a more perfect union. We are their progeny. There is a developmental logic from dependence to independence to interdependence. The Declaration of Independence was a call for action to dissolve our colonial dependence on British domination, which the colonists awoke to see as a tyranny. The colonists in their towns and villages and a few larger cities and on their farms increasingly felt rejected by their king, who they called the father, and treated as less than equals, as British citizens. They became active in collecting donations for the citizens of Boston, who were the most dominated of the British colonial subjects. Bostonians felt the iron grip of British military occupation before other cities. The colonists raised funds, materials, and weapons for the new colonial army. They policed their neighbors, identifying friends and enemies, as many of their neighbors were still loyal to the king. The famous 55 founders, the signers of the Declaration and the framers of the Constitution, were not creating the movement for independence on their own. They were responding to the activeness of ordinary people throughout the colonies who created new centers of power as energized citizens. This reminds me of Garth creating new centers of community power. The founders relied on these citizens emotionally, materially, and politically. Without the revolution in the minds of these citizens, who took the reins of power into their own hands in communities across the colonies, there would have been no victory over Great Britain. The founders were from the more educated and privileged class in the colonies. Many read European philosophers and political theorists and studied the history of other societies. Responding to the revolutionary thrust of the citizens who demanded equality and freedom, the founders forged out the Constitution from the heat of their own conflicts. The Constitution defined a government for the American people to achieve justice, security, safety, domestic tranquility, and the common good, and the pursuit of happiness. Though contradicting their own vision, many white, wealthy founders couldn't resolve their dependence on exploiting and enslaving other Americans. And they couldn't resolve the disunity between slave and non-slave states, except through making the enslavement of African Americans legal in the Constitution, although it never mentioned the word slave or slavery. And building in non-democratic features into our structure of government, like the Electoral College and the US Senate and state-determined US House districts that allowed what is now known as gerrymandering. Nevertheless, the founders defined unalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Notably, as my friend Michael Maccabee points out, the French in their later revolution substituted fraternity for the pursuit of happiness. Fraternity implies interdependence. Developing from dependence on Great Britain to independence as a nation was only possible because the interdependence of the founders with the revolutionary movement of the American people. The founders and the citizens, who are called in the Constitution in capital letters, the people, valued their independence from the beginning of the country. As our nation grew, many citizens came to idealize the individual as the model of human development and independence. Individualism became, for many, equivalent with Americanism. Liberty as an American value expressed in our national charters is seen by many so-called libertarians as the right of individuals to be left alone. Live free or die, say these individualists. Keep away. Don't intrude on my space or my freedom to do what I want. This sentiment masks our human interdependence on our fellow citizens and neighbors. With killer viruses, live free or die is not a choice. It is, tragically for many, a sequence. Those who refuse vaccines or masks as intrusions on their freedom can believe they are living free, but they are 11 times more likely to die from the virus than those who are vaccinated. Liberty, in the full meaning of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, is the interdependent active liberty of the American people to govern themselves. Together, we can make a more perfect union. We don't have to depend on others. We can together actively create a better America. That is what liberty has always meant from our founding to today. There are forces, however, undermining interdependence. The media addicts citizens' attention to breaking news, tribal identities, and spectacles. This addiction disregards that the founders forewarned that democracy required an educated public. School districts eliminate required civics, and colleges drop American history. 61% of Americans in a recent survey cannot name the three branches of government. 25% can only name one branch of government. Religious membership is plummeting. Though today's newspapers are more objective than those earlier in our republic, The latest media spin, isolated fact, and indignity prevent constructive civic deliberation. Lobbying for businesses, professional or special interests, feeds on divisions, conflicts, and individual interests in America. Lobbying amplifies and manipulates disunity. The Constitution intended that when interests compete, the general welfare should emerge. But the founders warned that oligarchy would undermine the common good. Today, the wealthy, the oligarchy, take an increasingly large percentage of the economy's rewards. Economic and racial inequality, food insecurity, and suffering swells. Many citizens were working several jobs to survive even before the pandemic shrank the economy. Many citizens live cramped in overcrowded rooms or on the street. It is hard to even conceive of our human interdependencies in a nation of racial inequalities in policing, the administration of justice, housing, education, opportunities for jobs, and family net worth when white people achieve greater health and live longer than those in communities of color. And there are also poor whites who suffer many of the same inequities as racial minorities. Doctors Maybank and Wolf, in their presentations and discussion, have described the history and the reality of how racial and class inequality continues to undermine the health of our fellow citizens. They have pointed to what citizens can do to move toward a healthier, ideal future for all Americans. Our interdependencies should be spoken about more, and they should guide us forward. Personal interdependencies should be spoken about more and guide us forward. Michael McAbee's presentation gave us an American and world historical deep analysis of the true nature of happiness, which is to live a virtuous life of service to others, which is a life that affirms our human interdependence. What one does not have to be a psychologist to understand that happiness comes largely from meaningful relationships in family, friendship, intimate relationships, neighborhoods, the nation, the world, spiritual communities, and work. Few people can be happy alone, not only because they cannot share their lives with others and develop, they cannot develop through those relationships. Happiness emerges by contributing to the common good, lifting the burdens from others and giving to the human community. Productively giving of oneself in these ways forms identity and maturity, builds resilience and emotional strength. Human interdependence is essential for a meaningful life and the full potential of love. If one lives a privileged life, not aware of how others suffer or are denied their rights, one does not contribute to others' well-being, one's experience of life is narrowed. Awareness of our human interdependence with others opens the world for us and educates our hearts. Recent examples are the outpouring of love for frontline workers during the pandemic, and the mass multiracial protests against police and white supremacist murders of Black citizens. Economic interdependency should be spoken about more and guide us forward. Labor and capital are interdependent. Neither exists alone, though they continually fight. Labor and capital also depend on citizen-funded infrastructures, roads, bridges, ports, telecommunications, national laboratories, stockpiles, and agencies of public safety, defense, international relations, health, family, child, and elderly care, education, law, justice, commerce, and finance. Labor and capital pursue different interests, but different interests can coexist between interdependent parties. The highest measures of happiness, health, and well-being in the world are not in our country, as Gar has pointed out, according to the OECD, the Organization of the 36 Wealthiest Economic Powers in the World. The highest measures of social well-being are in Scandinavian countries, where labor and capital have invested for years in learning to work together productively for their national welfare. Government interdependencies should be spoken about more and guide us forward. Pandemics show the interdependency of different levels of government. Lacking foresight and systems thinking, some states delay taking protective measures or even block them. Perhaps those states have governors who want to assert states' rights independence as they appeal to leave me alone libertarians. But viruses aren't stopped by ideals of independence or liberty, and viruses don't follow election cycles. Effective government requires that local, state, and federal governments work together. Government is an instrument for the pursuit of happiness of the people in our American home. When governments inhibit each other or try and act independently, the purpose of government itself is subverted, as when a state prevents a locality from setting its own pandemic protections for its citizens, or prevents a locality from removing statues that offend the people. Governments should be partners for the national purpose, the general welfare, domestic tranquility, safety, and the blessings of liberty for all the American people. Pandemics reveal an absence of national strategy. Without collaborative interdependence of governments and departments, sicknesses increase and the general welfare diminishes. Government-citizen interdependence should be spoken about more and guide us forward. Our racial justice challenge is reawakened by yet more police murders of African Americans. Redesigning public safety requires trust, shared work, and planning between citizens, government, and police. As Drs. Maybank and Wolf have shown in their presentation, structural racism produces reduced healthcare outcomes for African Americans and other people of color. This systemic inequality shows the interdependence of laws, attitudes, and health. As bioethicist Osogi K. Obasogi writes, pandemics have a political economy behind them. Educator Stan Litow spoke about bringing schools, colleges, and businesses into strategic partnerships for the benefit of all these stakeholders, citizens, city and state governments, and private businesses. AFT president, American Federation of Teachers president, Randy Weingarten, spoke about bringing muscle to uniting teachers, parents, students, and different levels of government for the shared purpose of educating the rising generation. Achieving the constitutional purposes of general welfare and domestic tranquility, mentioned in the preamble of the Constitution as elements of our national purpose, requires a national strategy of interdependent collaboration between governments and citizens. Human and nature interdependence should be spoken about more and guide us forward. As Myra Jackson spoke about so clearly, and also Davidica, Little Spotted Horse, spoke about. Climate warming produces wildfires, melting ice sheets, droughts, tornadoes, floods, decline of biodiversity, and unseen damage to our planet. No nation alone can correct these consequences and go its own way unfazed. Nations work interdependently for the common planetary good or suffer together the results of delusional independence. Unstudied plants, for example, might yield new medicines, but these biodiversity options decline as humans destroy natural environments. Half of the rainforests, one of the world's major oxygen producers, are gone. Half of the rainforests. Two-thirds of wetlands have been destroyed. 60% of the world's wildlife has been eliminated since 1970. 60% of the world's wildlife has been eliminated since 1970. Urban and materialistic development is supposedly beneficial, but if not done wisely, degrades the sustainability of natural systems. Zoonotic diseases, where pathogens jump from animals to humans, such as AIDS, SARS, Ebola, and COVID-19, as research suggests, become more possible. Ecosystems are thrown out of balance by unthinking human disruptions. Rodents, bats, snakes, monkeys, mosquitoes, and ticks live closer to humans, and natural predators minimally cannot migrate or go extinct entirely. One country reacting to a crisis cannot address international ecosystem disruptions. Experts with knowledge of systems call for a One Health strategy encompassing the whole system of human, animal, environmental interdependency. Nations' interdependency should be spoken about more and guide us forward. Nations are interdependent with both allies and enemies. Nations assert their apparent independence at their peril. Pursuing national interests requires wise strategies to avoid new vulnerabilities. Ambassador Frederick Barton has given numerous practical principles to guide productive strengthening of nations' interdependence. It seems strong and patriotic to assert national independence, but nuclear weapons, climate disaster, and pandemics require countries working together for mutual survival. Winslow Myers described the continuing threat of nuclear genocide for the whole human race, the ultimate and potentially final fate of nations not working interdependently. There are non-nuclear nations, as he points out. A nuclear exchange would produce what scientists call nuclear winter, a global dust cloud obscuring the sun for as long as 10 years. No agriculture, no life. One citizen action would be to convene a convention and write a declaration of interdependence. It could describe the purpose and strategic principles for the sane development of our country as the home of the American people. It could describe how to fulfill our values of freedom and equal rights in a sustainable world. The ideal future of our American home requires full awareness of our multiple interdependencies in the global community. A declaration of interdependence is just one citizen-initiated step toward a vision for our country that addresses our challenges. It might spark a national nonpartisan conversation. There are numerous projects to bring citizens together to discuss their varying ideas and perspectives and to create civic discussions and understanding. All these projects are valuable and can break the addiction cycle that Professor Lessig has described. Perhaps the most important way to create deep civic dialogue that can lead to shared action is to center these discussions on what our ideal future should be, what it can be, what it must be. Once there is a shared vision, then designing new policies, structures, and practices to move to that ideal future becomes clearer. Starting with shared vision could lead to the many political perfections for our democracy that Professor Thor Hogan and Professor Lessig described. a shared vision of our democracy would require what Selina Stewart described as the full and unfettered participation of all citizens to voting as an expression of their American liberty for self-government. A shared democratic vision, small d, would require the rejuvenated public service that Professor Kendrick Stewart and President Tom Ross of the Volcker Alliance outlined based on their ideas of how to engage students in a life of public service. Such a national nonpartisan declaration and conversation would build on the insights of Professor Ravi Perry and Hila Hanif about the nature of being American and what it requires of us humanly. Such a visionary conversation would be grounded in the deep spiritual compassion that matriarch Davidic a little spotted horse described of the profound interdependence of nature, capital N, as Myra points out, and all peoples expressed in the Lakota view of life. Such spiritual grounding was also expressed in Dr. Georgette Bennett's embracing care of those forced into being refugees from their countries. Her person-to-person diplomacy to reduce interreligious hatreds and her pointing to how a country dedicated to be the beacon of hope to the world can realize its own vision to be a welcoming home for the dispossessed. To be a home for the American people, we need to perfect not only the structures of government and the underlying principles of our spiritual and human social fabric. We also have to redesign an essential element of our health and the health of our planet, the food, agriculture, and sustainability systems upon which life depends. Professor Sabine O'Hara has shown the nature, farming, citizen interdependencies, especially in her urban practices addressing food and nutrition education deserts in Washington, D.C. Farmer Gail Olson has shown the creativity that de Tocqueville saw in Americans in 1830, our genius for voluntary organizations. In her Practical Farmers of Iowa, she's on the board, where farmers teach each other how to preserve the land and the water while building productive farms, and also working with federal and state agencies to create sustainable agricultural practices and standards. Innovator Seth Goldman showed the power of citizen entrepreneurial and innovation to drive old systems of the food business to sustainable thinking and practices. Clark Strickland showed the power of a young student, a young citizen, to transform an educational institution rooted in America's original sin of slavery, to see itself honestly, without blinders, and commit itself to contribute to our nation of many diversities. Library System Director Richard Reyes Gavilan has transformed the old concept of the library into a center of civic life, filled with services and opportunities to learn and expand the potential of life in our democracy. This morning, Stephanie Wilkinson has shown another example of de Tocqueville's appreciation of American voluntary organizations. In her showing how diverse citizens in her small town of Lexington, Virginia, got together and helped create opportunity for white and especially African-Americans in town to create new businesses. This showed that their active agency as citizens realized our American vision of equal dignity and opportunity for all persons. Selina Stewart showed the dedication of the League of Women Voters to protect the rights of all citizens to vote and to remove those barriers that some have been continuing to erect to their active liberty and civic duty to govern themselves as members of the people. Conference presenters O'Hara, Olson, Goldman, Strickland, Reyes-Gavilan, Wilkinson, and Selena Stewart have each shown the potentials of citizens, businesses, and governments to thrive together when they strategically and purposely build on their inherent interdependence to advance the general welfare. Hope is created when citizens like these, who spoke this week, think and act in these new ways. When citizens change, society changes. John Adams said the American Revolution occurred not when colonists took up arms against the British. He believed the American Revolution took place in the minds of the colonists when they grasped they could take action to be free and create a nation for their own happiness. Citizens and governments must work interdependently for the common good. During our tragic Civil War, Abraham Lincoln, our greatest visionary and humanist, called us with, quote, malice toward none, with charity for all. During the Civil War, when Americans were killing each other, called us with malice toward none and with charity for all to our better angels. We are friends, he said. We cannot be enemies. We are all responsible as citizens for a better America. We will persist. Join us. Thank you very much. And so it's 4:15. If anyone here in the Zoom room would like to make a comment or ask a question, please feel free. If not, I will just say this has been a wonderful beginning venture that I think we will all continue to work on.